This is something new. Okay. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Crew Call 2-5. Here we are already in May. Nice spring day today. And we have our returning champion, Mike Confalone. Say hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Actually, we often refer to each other.
Hi, Mike.
Yeah. We often refer to each other as MC and MR because, hey, Mike doesn't seem to work. When we're both in a room.
MR, and that does not stand for Model Railroader.
That's no, it doesn't.
Just Mike Rose.
It should actually. That, right. They,
Mike Rose.
They named that after me.
Right.
You know, yeah. We spoke on the podcast of, when was that? It was back in the early fall, I think. And for the life of me, I couldn't tell you what we spoke about, but. Since one of the features of MC is that he's always coming up with some new angle, I guarantee you that this will be a new angle that we're talking about. And I'll preface it by saying that I guess it was a little more than a month ago, maybe you called me up and said, you know what, this business of not operating the layout is not working for me. I'm going to start running the entire obsession myself. And my first thought was, how is that even possible? And my second thought was, interesting. So when you started to do it, we had some conversations about it, and it actually intrigued the hell out of me. And I was just finishing up some construction in the Avoca area, and I said, you know what, I'm going to start doing this too. So what we're going to talk about is our impressions of how this all went, lessons learned, and maybe what we're going to tweak a little bit as we do this more moving forward in the short term and incorporating it into operations in general, you know, down the road. So as usual, you're a little ahead of me on all of this. So why don't you just kind of tell us how you got the idea and how you decided to, you know, employ it, and I'll jump in as permitted here.
Yeah, I think it was... more than a month. It was definitely more than a month ago. I couldn't tell you what the date was when I made the decision to do it. I could go back and maybe on the Facebook group page, and I'm sure I posted some things, you know, back a ways when all this nonsense that the country's dealing with started. And beyond that, it was after that, the initial changes.
So it might even be 3 months.
But I think so. What's today? May 20th?
Yeah.
21st, 20th, something like that. So I'd say it was more like 6 weeks ago, maybe 7 weeks ago, something in that range, you know. So, I mean, it really just boils down to, you know, looking at the possibility of not running for an indefinite period of time, because the Allagash is typically on an every 4 to 6 week schedule with the guys, you know.
Yep.
And the thought of not running for months was just like, ridiculous, you know, just why? And it sort of made me think about, well, I want to enjoy the railroad. I want to run the railroad. I can't imagine it sitting for that long. So why don't I just do a session? It was really as simple as that. I hadn't set up for one. I wasn't ready for one. So I proceeded to prepare for one. Let me take a sip of my tea. Sorry about that. But you're going to be hearing that for the next little while. But anyway, so I set up like I normally would for a session, got all the waybills flipped, set up all the power consists, and said, let me just pick away at this. So I started picking away at it.
And just so people know, that's about maybe a three-hour process?
Well, the prep, yeah, maybe it's 3 hours. It might be a little less than that at this point. I've honed it. Used to be a lot longer, but it's not so bad anymore.
Yep.
So I just started running. You know, I said, well, let's look at the schedule, what a typical schedule would be, and just start, let's pick a train. Let's start at New Sharon and run the switcher for a little while. Let's switch the mill. Let's do this, A, B, C, and D. And then let's can middle, I'm not done with my work there. Let's just stop. Let's freeze time. Let's just say, okay, we're going to move on now.
Is that because you ran out of time?
The switcher there.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't because you ran out of time that day.
No, just because
the point.
Well, maybe it was, or maybe it wasn't. Maybe I just said, you know what, I'm done. You know, I want to move on and do something different now.
Yeah.
And I just kind of had to think in different terms. you know, this is a day in the life, more than a staged session. This is sort of, okay, this is ground zero. We're going to start here, get the clock going, not literally, but start the clock. This is the, whatever day it is, Tuesday, April 20th, 1985, and we're going to run the railroad. And I just sort of hopped from job to job. So a road job would complete. It would go from, you know, its origination to its destination. Maybe it would stop before it entered the yard and before it got chopped up or processed or, you know, classified. But it was just a kind of a hop around sort of approach to it. So in order to simulate the fact that, you know, to simulate a full session where you had multiple people running at the same time. So I wasn't going to take job A and run it all the way to it until it was done and then go to the next job. I was sort of doing it so that there was more natural interaction. And I decided to really immediately, once I started doing this, I think I started with the Oxford County, because for whatever reason, I've been stuck on the Oxford County for a long time, just the different changes and operational tweaks. So I was running them, and that's where it started. I said, let me run a whole circuit their typical day. And I did that. And then I said, okay, now what's next? Then I hop on the Allegash and started doing that. And then immediately what I noticed is I just felt like I was working more than normal. So I was just talking to a friend of mine yesterday, Jim Abbott, who you know. And Jim and I were talking, and he brought up the same thing. He said, so basically you're reporting for duty when you do this. And it really felt that way. It felt like I was actually working, not having an obsession and playing.
Yeah,
and
you're reporting for duty.
Reporting for duty, yeah. And I think it helped to, number one, it was, you know, I think for everybody out there, it's a good distraction to do this kind of thing. It takes your mind off what's going on. And if you have a job to do that requires focus, it helps. So I think it helped me in treating it that way. And I really took a deep dive into it and looked at things a lot differently. And I found myself doing things a lot slower than I normally would. Not that I'm fast with it. I'm pretty diligent about doing things at a scale, proper scale speed and things. But I found that I really, really pulled the pace way, way back. So,
well, you're the sole determining factor on the urgency.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pull up to a switch, wait. Imagine the guy getting down, walking over the switch. All that, all the delay time, natural. And I just felt really good about it. Everything was great. The thing that was, as far as the audio effect or audio impact, you know, in an op session, I are both pretty tuned into what sounds good and what doesn't sound good. I mean, sound is a very, very, very important part of the operating scenario. And I find doing this solo, the sounds are a lot, I enjoy them a lot more. There's a lot less noise, people, and of other.
Yeah, there's no background trains. Conversation.
No, there's nothing. There's no din in the background. So everything.
There's
is
no radio
more,
chatter either. You know, I mean, there is that.
Well, I almost pulled out the radios and scanners and started talking to myself, but then I said that's probably going a little bit too far. But I was, in some of the videos, I was, you know, saying 5 cars, 703, okay to stop, things like that. I probably did those during the videos, the Facebook clips more than anything. So,
yep.
But I think, overall, so I've gone through one full circuit, one complete op session, and I'm almost completed the second op session. So, and also what I did was to reintroduce the night operation. So, which I really missed. And, so it's a full day. So you're going through daylight, then twilight, then night, and then back to day the next day. So it's a real, I'm on day two here. It has changed everything, I would say. And, you know, we can get into the nuances and the details in the conversation, but what I think the overriding theme for me, and, you know, you and I talked about this, is that this is the new norm. And you hear about this new norm buzzword in society about, you know, COVID and all this crap, and it's not a pleasant thing when you hear about the new norm, because it's a lot of negative things. But new norm can apply to things like this in a positive way. And really for me, this has pulled unmasked or pulled the curtain away. And the bottom line is I will never, the railroad will never sit fallow again for weeks at a time between sessions. It's just never going to happen again. So this railroad is, I call it operation in perpetuity. Mm. It is a continuous process. It is never, there's no end point. I will keep a calendar of where I am, and the railroad will run every day. In other words, when I say that, we are going day by day by day. We're normally, at least the way I did it, between sessions was, you know, say 4 or 5 weeks passed by. In reality, actual time passed could have been 3 weeks, 2 days, a day, 28 days. It didn't matter because every session sort of started from where the previous one left off with locomotives and
but are you referring to actual time or model time? Like, let's be clear about what you mean by that.
Well, so I'm going to keep a calendar. I created, I think, you know, I started on whatever the date was, April, whatever, or March something. And I'm on the second day. So I'm on Wednesday, March 29th or April 1st, whatever it is. I haven't written the dates down, but I'm going to. So, you know, to get through a full session, it requires a full 24-hour cycle, including night operations, and then you start the next day. So, you know, so it's you're continuing to operate. I mean, you have to think in a mindset, this is a real railroad, and how would the railroad run without this 5-week gap between sessions where you can stage everything all conveniently? You know, I want this engine on this train and this one, blah, blah, blah. And so there's no more of that. Mm. So, and this is where it gets into the details, into the nuance, because treating it that way, typically in the old scenario, between sessions, you would set up your road freights and staging and at Madrid, at New Sharon, and with the whatever power you wanted to put there for that session. Didn't matter. It's like, all right, I'm going to set up a consist here, and I'm going to put this engine for the switcher at Madrid and this one over here for at New Sharon, yada, yada, yada. Now you start from ground zero, from the beginning. You set up your consists in staging offline. You set up your switchers at the yards. And the power cannot be manipulated. There's no 050-ing, no hand carrying of engines, moving them, or anything like that. So any locomotive that comes onto the railroad needs to get off the railroad the same way. It can't be just arbitrarily removed. It has to, you know, if I get a, for instance, there's a consist right now. Yeah, like right now there's a...
I mean, obviously you 050 it in staging if you're going to make a change.
Well, once it reaches... Well, here's the thing. In the case of my railroad, the only place that locomotives would leave the system and not come back is at Waterville, the south end of the railroad.
Yep.
The north end of the railroad, Allegash, is captive. Okay, anything that goes up there to either to Jackman or to Allegash on the north end has to come back because there's no gateway up there. That's the end of the line.
Yep.
So if you have a northbound consist, I ran during this session on WAAG, Waterville to Allegash, that consist will have to come back on the next
now,
south.
Now, in the past, would you have not done that?
No, I would have 05'd home. You know, just because it didn't matter. There was no synchronicity between sessions. There's no link. When yep. 6 weeks goes by, what's the difference? Is anybody going to remember that consist went north? No.
Yeah.
But if I'm running all the time now, and when we get back to running sessions with the guys, it's going to be, you know, that whatever, I'll be aware of it because, yeah, that power set went north and now it's got to come back. And if you want to, by the same token, if you have locomotives stationed at the yard at, say, Madrid, I can't just change the switcher out and just pull it off. It's got to be, you know, what would happen? Well, they're going to swap it out. Last night I was running at night, pitch black down here, and I had the 702, which was the yard engine there. I said, you know what, we're going to swap. So I pulled it off, you know, latched it onto a southbound train, which was in the yard setting out and picking up lead, and that led on the road train. So we pull up a different unit off a road set that was already at the terminal for the switcher. So those are the kinds of things you have to think about. Ferrying locomotives, I ferried engines on a couple of occasions.
Sure.
Excess power. So all these kind of moves, now lend a lot more prototypical flavor to the operations. Not, you can't cheat anymore. There's no cheating. And that's kind of, I hate to use the word cheating, because it's not really cheating, because this isn't real.
But if you really want to,
shortcutting, you know, and all of those things, the little things like that add up to big things. You know, they add up to the overall experience. So
let's talk about some similarities and differences. Because as you can probably guess, you know, Mike and I chat about, you know, X number of times per week. So we, you know, we log a fair amount of phone time. And I'm listening to all of this as I'm getting ready to operate too. And I'm mm-hmm. listening to this with great interest because it's making a great deal of sense to me. There's a lot of appeal to it. I loved the idea of operating in perpetuity as soon as I heard it, because I thought, you know, it's going to get me running the layout in between on a continuous basis, which I'm, you know, praise be, finally at a stage where I can do even when I'm working on it.
Right.
So although I had been used to long outages while I did massive things, there's nothing else to do to the railroad that would require a long outage anymore. You know what I mean? Plenty of work to do. But
I wrote this down, the date and time you said that, and I'm going to remind you.
I just proved it with that, the double ending of North Staging. You know what I mean? That was
exactly. Yep.
A couple of 3 hours.
It didn't take the railroad down.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that's good stuff.
So now for me, you know, all you were doing really was deciding to operate an existing mature layout in a different way. What I was doing was figuring out a bunch of things for the first time, because in between the last session and starting this up, I also went with a modified waybill system based in large part on a lot of the lessons that I learned, you know, using yours, but just simplifying it a little bit for my purposes, i.e., you know, two-sided for load and empty. So that had never been tested in combat. And even though I had, you know, basically written everything up and made all the decisions, you know, there was no assurance that it was just going to work seamlessly. I was pretty sure that I was going to find some things that I had written up incorrectly, and what better way to find out than to try to start operating with it, you know? So I was experiencing two things for the first time. I was experiencing using the waybill system and also attempting to operate the entire railroad myself. And I immediately realized that I was going to be doing some things that I'd never even done on my own layout, because usually in an op session, as you know, the host is pretty busy. And unless you make a really concerted effort to be an operator during that, you're typically more analogous to a road foreman or somebody like that. You know, you're sort of facilitating, you know, you're expediting things.
Right.
If you get to run a train, you know, it's a plus, but it's not really what you're normally doing in an op session. Somebody's got
to
be
just think about not to interrupt, but just think about how ridiculous that is. That's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. Now, I went through that for years. I was the dispatcher here all the time, and then I was the chicken running around with my head chopped off. And I said, enough of that nonsense. I stopped doing that a year or two ago. I'm like, you know what? I want to run trains on my own railroad. This is, you know, you guys are running the railroad and I'm walking around with my thumb, you know where, or figuring stuff out and troubleshooting. No more of that. And the thing is, this, I think more than anything, this is shines a light on the fact that this whole concept, and people are not going to agree with me here. I'm sure I'm maybe get some pushback from it, but so what? This whole concept of op session, where it's all the guys, every interval, whatever that interval is, every 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 8 weeks, and having this massive powwow, doesn't make any sense, because you're not even the ultimate enjoyment of in the hobby is running the railroad. I mean, you can scenic all day, do your scenery and your weathering and build this and build that. If the railroad doesn't run, what's the point? Why don't you just make a diorama?
Yeah,
and
it is a
put
diorama
it on a
at
shelf?
that point. Yep.
It's a diorama, and that's not what the railroad's all about. You know, seeing trains operate with a sense of purpose through this, all the scenery and the structures and all the work you've done is the ultimate justification for all that effort. So to wait weeks and weeks and weeks and let it sit there collecting dust while you wait and wait and wait makes no sense whatsoever. It's
Well,
totally counterintuitive.
What was so intriguing about your idea to me was that it sort of challenged that sort of conventional wisdom of, you know, you want to run the system that you devised, you have an obsession. So I immediately warmed up to the intellectual challenge of, okay, I've always thought about it from an obsession standpoint. Now I got to think about it from a me doing 100% of everything standpoint. That sounds like it's going to be at the very least challenging, but also potentially a lot of fun. And what I found was it was way more fun than I thought it was going to be. Like it really surprised the hell out of me. And that, I mean, how often do you get a significant pleasant surprise like that, right? Not often enough.
Right.
So I found that I was like really getting into it. So just the whole, now in my case, I had to populate, for example, Pittston Yard, like other than the consignees in the original side of the train room, the yards and staging were empty. So there had to be some initial setup to begin to populate that. And, we'd talked about 050-ing some stuff in place. And then I thought, you know what, that's stupid. I'm just going to run the railroad as if it's happening organically. So I thought, what would that entail? First thing I thought was, well, I'll go around and be Mr. Clerk, and I'll go to the consignees and kind of figure out what they need, and base the orders for those cars on how I was doing my initial staging of trains. And on my layout, as you know, I run two significant Conrail freights a day, one southbound, one northbound, and the southbound is first. And the northbound is later, and they were about 12 hours apart on my prototype. So I decided that the first thing I was going to do was to switch out Mahoopany myself, and I realized that you can't just like switch out the entire Mahoopany and pronounce it done. I found that in the course of running things, I would go back to Mahoopany. It took me about like three visits to do everything that needed to be done at Mahoopany. Because basically, you know, you're staging your pickups for the first train, and that guy's also dropping off a bunch of stuff for you. So the next time you work in Mahoopany, you're dealing with all of that stuff and then switching out the rest of the plant, and then you're staging the pickup for the next train. And then in between, you might want to be running over to Meshopin and Skinner's Eddy and places like that. So, you know, there's lots to do at Mahoopany. And I figured it was going to be at least three and maybe even four appearances by me to bring all of that about. I also found that, I don't know how long time-wise you're doing this, but I found that if I'm doing it for like 2.5 or 3 hours, I'm kind of spent after that. Like it's really engaging, and that's like a good evening.
I would, yeah. I mean, I'm not finding myself spent. Although I mean, I'm tired all the time anyway. Just
spent, spent isn't the word. I think satiated would be a better term.
Yeah, satisfied. Yeah, I think I would say that's probably. I would say the overall intensity level is much lower, but that's a lot of that's just, I can't really speak for other people. I don't know how if other people try to do this, who knows how it's going to be for them. You know, they got to give it their best shot, and they might hate it. I don't know. You know, it's hopefully not. I hope they find it enjoyable. I think, I would qualify this by saying, you know, we don't want to make this sound like it's the end all be all, because the fact is,
It's also a work in progress. I mean, it's going to
well,
evolve.
It's not, no, not so much that, but just the basic idea of one person running a railroad of significant size. Now, most people don't have huge railroads, and you know, they might only have a couple of jobs, so one person running them is great. But if you have a large railroad with multiple jobs all over the place, like we do, it is probably too busy when you've got an obsession going on and all this chaos, you know. But it's probably not busy enough when it's solo, because, you know, but I think it's closer to reality when you're solo, because in my case, in the state of Maine, in the mid-80s, if you're at a particular location, like, say, New Sharon, you're not going to have, you know, very rarely will you have road trains meeting there. You can meet trains there. It happens. But it's not that common. You might have one road train come through, and then hours and hours and hours go by and nothing. You know, you've got the switcher working there. So the overall pace of things for this kind of railroad, for the Allegash and the short line, the Oxford County, is fine. It translates well.
Yeah.
If you have a large railroad that's very, very busy, it might not translate very well. It might just be like, you know what, there's just not enough guys, not enough jobs running at the same time. It's a little bit artificial. So it really depends on the type of railroad you have. But I think most people have smaller layouts that are more manageable that, you know, probably fall into this category where there's not so many jobs all over the place. And there's less interaction, less noise. It's a little quieter. You know, I think it's doable. You know, it's very doable.
I wonder if that is, I'm tempted to say true. In other words, but I'm not saying it's a lie. I'm just saying, I wonder if that's all just a matter of mindset. And the reason I say that is, like I was talking about this with the chief, you know, I was bouncing things off of mm-hmm. Dave. And boy, he wasn't having any of it. He really kind of poo-pooed it. He said, no, there's, you know, you got to have things that are happening simultaneously.
When did you talk to him about this?
A couple days ago, I think, you know.
Little chief, he was crapping all over the idea. Really, we're going to have to call him and have a little discussion about this.
And you know,
wow.
maybe I wasn't articulating it, you know, properly or not. But the I think my point is this, that if you approach it from the with a preconceived notion that, well, I've got to have X happening simultaneously, then yes, you're going to be disappointed if only one thing's happening at a time. On the other hand, I'm looking at each thing that I'm doing as, you know, think about like in a movie where, you know, they'll show you a scene with some action happening here and then they'll cut to another scene.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just thinking, okay, I'm just moving from, you know, one cast of characters to another. You know, when I left the Mahoopany job, for example, and it was time to run CGAL, mm-hmm. I was the CGAL crew. You know what I mean? And when I got when I got to Mahoopany to do my pickups and set offs, I then continued on to Pittston Yard, but mm-hmm. when I went back to Mahoopany the next day, I was the Mahoopany crew, and it didn't matter that it was the next day. It was just the next time I was performing that function. You know what I mean? So,
I agree.
For me, because I rely on Dave a lot to think about like the planning and how it all fits together. It forced mm-hmm. me to really think about it, to really make sure that I understood what was interrelated, what had to happen in the right order to make things, you know, go the way they should ideally go. And I made mistakes, you know what I mean? Like, well, I found that I'm able to make the same stupid mistakes doing this that I do at your place. I can't tell you how many times I've left a spot and left all of the cards, you know.
Yeah. Sure. You went home with cards, right? In your back pocket. I'm like, where the hell are the waybills? Oh, my! Oh, I just found these waybills in my back. Thanks a lot.
Notorious. I know.
Going back to Dave's point and your counterpoint. So I think the way you have to think about this is in terms of if you were a rail fan or an observer at a particular location, what is your experience there? So although in a real world, there may be jobs running simultaneously, you're not experiencing those jobs because you can't
Right.
be in more than two places, more than one place at a time, right? So if you're at Mehoopany, for instance, like the way I would handle that, and I'm sure you did the same thing, you're on the switcher, you're setting up a pickup, you're working, the engine doesn't move constantly, okay? It does some work and it sits. It does some work and it sits. And then you sit for a bit, you do set up your stuff, then you get on your road train, you bring the road train in, you set out, you pick up, and then maybe while the road train is doing that, the switcher moves a little bit and does a little more work. You can hop from throttle to throttle. That's the other thing I've been doing, has been using one radio throttle for all the operation. I simply dial in if if I'm at Madrid and my road train comes in and the power cuts off and goes to the house, and then I'll change the address on the radio throttle on the UT4R, get on the switcher, start drilling cars, and back and forth. So I'm both crews. So there is interaction. It's just that there's
Yeah,
one guy
and
doing two things.
that's a little different from how we do it in the NCE world. I mean, I'm used to doing that because you just simply address another loco and that's it. You're not even turning any
Right.
knobs. You just punch it in.
You see, I can do it in my sleep because I have a proper rheostat radio throttle instead of using a paddle that looks like from an Atari video game back in 79. But we won't discuss that. So,
This is a personal preference, but I think the NCE guys would
yeah,
differ.
okay. Try doing that in the dark where you have to constantly look and play with the little wheel and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I won't.
So the
But
other, well, yeah,
I.
I don't have a lot of experience with nighttime running here yet, but I can see
Well,
the
that's the other thing. We
I
have
see
to.
the
This
I can
is
see the
part.
advantage of
This
it.
is. This is the part of the. This is part of the package. See, this is where the rubber meets the road because railroads run 24/7. They don't. When the sun goes down, they don't say, "Oh boy, it's beautiful. What a beautiful day that was." But let's all go to sleep. They keep running through the next 12 hours, 15 hours until the sun comes up again. So, if you're going to run in perpetuity, and I'm not saying people have to do this, they should think about it. Think about the benefit of that, because then it really, really adds a flavor of plausible of prototype sort of feel to the whole thing. And it takes a lot of work to be able to do night operations. It really does, because you can't just turn the lights off
Right.
and run
You, I mean,
trains. You have to have
you've
light.
got your blue rope lights and all of that, with lacking something like that, you're kind of out of luck. You've got to
No,
make some,
you have to plan for it.
yeah.
Yeah, you have to plan for it. I mean, I have many, many, many buildings that are lit. I have all kinds of pole lights that are, actual sodium vapor lights.
Right.
You
And
know, you
anybody
need
that's
that.
got
You
a cob
add some of
structure
that.
has built-in lighting, so that is the kind of thing that I
Yeah.
hope to bring online, gradually. And if like all that Lacyville town was all lit up, I mean, that would make a huge difference there.
Yeah, and it's not so much the house lights are more very, very subtle things. They don't provide any ambient light. It's really the pole lighting, the lights that you see that frankly if anybody's out there from a manufacturer listening, get your head out of where and make one of these lights. I mean, these things have been around for there's a gazillion of them. The typical light, the teardrop light on a pole. Whether it was sodium vapor light or mercury vapor, mostly sodium, just any road in any small town is still there. They're converting them to LED now, but they're still there. That light was everywhere. Every industry, every residential street, they're everywhere. Nobody has manufactured that a working version of that light. It's ridiculous. Think
What are
about it.
you using?
Well, I'm making my own. Of course, anything that's good, you got to make your own. So Walther's makes a, they stopped making it. Now they're making it again. It's a street light. So the light portion of it, the arm that comes off with the teardrop light, they have that, but it's on a ridiculous looking, metal pole, which is more for highways and like really, I don't even know what it's for, frankly. It's useless. So I take the arm and cut that off along with the light, and then I have to, I attach those to a real wooden pole, a dowel, And then I run wires. I have to solder wires to the leads and then run the wires down the back of the pole, twisting them really tight to hide them. Then that goes into the layout to a 12-volt supply.
So
so it
other than
lights
the
the
lighting
light.
Itself, what are you keeping from the Walther's thing?
Nothing. Just basically, it's the light itself, the bulb in the enclosure, the teardrop light, with these two like metal probes that come off it, which are the arms of the light. Okay, and those attach to a wood pole. It's a completely homemade thing, and I've got like, I don't know, 20 of these things around the layout. They look, you know, in photographs, first of all, fortunately, the color of the light, of that light, the 12-volt light, is an almost exact match for a sodium vapor street light. It's a very, very distinct color. It's like an orangey, it's not quite orange, it's a weird color because it's a gas light.
It's a bulb,
so
right?
That,
on the
it's a bulb, it's a 12-volt bulb. It's very dim. It's not a big, bright bulb. It's a very dim bulb, which
have
is
you
what
had
you
any
want.
Burnout?
Never. No, actually, I do. I have one that burned out at New Shown. If anybody's out there, if you're listening, look at the picture I just posted on Facebook last night or the night before. I was down here running at night, the Oxford County. It's a single shot at White Mountain Junction of the Oxford County 104 by the shed, with a single light on the pole, and it's a burn-in shot. There's no flashlighting. It's available light. And just look at that. And that is about as realistic as you can get in terms of night railroading. When you've got a single pole light, I can't tell you how many times I've shot night photography over the years where that was all you had, was one or two of those sodium vapor lights, and you'd open up the lens, you'd put it on a tripod and let it sit for a minute or two and burn that in. So, anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself, but that's the most critical thing. And if Walther's is listening, you need to produce that light on a proper wooden pole, because it would sell by the quadrillions, you know, because it's just the most common light out there. But for some reason, nobody seems to think about that. So anyway,
well, I wanted
but
to,
as far as it just, no, go ahead. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I wanted to get back to the concept of a day. Because when I started operating, there's a lot of new sections to the layout now. There's another whole railroad that's involved. A lot of the interaction between the two had never happened. And I was very curious to see how long it would take me to run everything on the railroad once. So what I've been finding is, if you take the, you know, two and a half hour rough amount of time, which by the way goes by very quickly because it's like total immersion. So what usually happens is, you know, you feel like, geez, I'm a little tired. And then you say, whoa, that's because it's 3 hours later. No wonder, you know, it's like 12 midnight and you haven't been upstairs yet. And I've been doing it, let's say 4 or 5 nights a week. So it's taken, and I've been doing it for 3 weeks. So let's say 12 to 14 operations sessions. I'm still not all the way through every job. I've run.
So you're approaching 30. You're approaching 30 hours of operating.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know if you've logged it. Something
I
like
haven't.
That, yeah.
I haven't.
Okay. Yeah, I started to, and I said,
Well, in part because I'm utterly unconcerned with it, other than just from the you know, it might be interesting to see. It's hard for me. I guess I would define my day, my work day, like a complete cycle as being, well, if the first thing it's tough because Mahoopani you do like continuously, but if you take like maybe the first southbound road train, you know, CGAL as like the beginning of the cycle, other than the pre stuff you do at Mahoopani, I guess the next time that you feel it's time to run that train, you know, you've run all your locals and what have you, maybe that's the conclusion of a cycle. But again, you've also got the DNH side of it. You've got the short lines. Like I haven't done the TMSL switching at Towanda yet. The P&E is sitting around at Pittston for another cycle of road trains to give them some cars to do something with. So I haven't done really anything with the P&E yet. And I'm also finding as I get into this more, I'm getting some ideas. In fact, I'll bounce this off you in real time. Now, mm-hmm. we had decided at one point that to give the switcher at Mehoopany a little bit extra stuff to do, and also because we learned that the prototype did this also, that he would be responsible for going down and switching out the mill at my shop in Kenton Milling. And you've done that, I think, in fact.
Right? Many times.
Yeah. So then we also added on, well, you know, he's over in my shop, and why doesn't he switch out Skinner's Eddie? Fine. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and then I started thinking about it, and I actually thought about this after I ran WASY10, which is the southbound local out of Sayre that does Tawanda and Wyalusing. Because we also had included Lacyville in that, and I think it became obvious that if you were going to do that, the trains were going to end up being too big, and it was just, to me, it seemed a little hokey, because in real life, Skinner's Eddie and Lacyville are like a 4-minute walk from each other. I mean, literally. They just happen to be across a boundary. So I thought, I'm going to try doing it, and this is what I did. I had WASY10 do Tawanda, which included switching out Masonite, switching out Wyalusing Planing, doing the interchange with TMSL in the yard for their pickups and their setoffs, and believe it or not, by not having the ability to go down to Lacyville and do some runaround moves, you are limited to the one runaround that exists at Tawanda. So it was interesting and challenging to do. In other words, it was a good job just doing that. So I think I'm going to try just to see how it works. And somewhere Dave is squirming, but I'm going to have the Mehoopany guy do Lacyville too, because I think they would have. I think they would.
Well,
immediately adjacent, you know.
Yeah, if you can't confirm that they did in reality or they did, you're trying to follow prototype practices as much as possible. So, but you know, it sounds like a logical move. I think those are the kinds of things that, in your case, you're learning. On the run here. This is sort of you're learning about your own railroad.
That's right.
In my case, it's different. We're very different in that regard because I know this like the back of my hand. Mature operation. However, this is where it is, and for me is quite interesting, is because because of what you're doing it, you know, in perpetuity. So typically, going back to the old way, railroad runs every 4 to 6 weeks, right? In general, you'd have a broadcast of trains, all the jobs, and all those jobs would run over two sessions. Remember, we split the session in half and we did it over two sessions, but all those jobs would run. Now, that doesn't make any sense because now that I'm running in perpetuity, I'm running on, say, today's Monday, I'm going to do this, all the jobs, and then Tuesday comes, day two. So let me give you a specific example. On day one, I ran the Carthage turn. Now, that's a local that goes from Madrid out to Carthage. It works at Weld, the feed store at Weld, the team track there, and it goes up to Carthage to fetch pulpwood from the woodyard. I went up there and did that job, came back, just like a normal op session, okay? Now, session two, I'm saying to myself, why would I'm not going to run the Carthage turn again because that pulpwood's not loaded up there. It's the next day. They're starting to load, but it's not all loaded. And the lumber cars I set out on the team track at Carthage, they're not emptied. Maybe they're in the process of emptying them, but they're not emptied.
Right.
So I didn't run it. Now, that's never happened before. But you see, those are the kinds of things. So, for instance, I ran a road job to Dixfield. It's the East Dixfield. The East Dixfield job on day two.
I was going to bring that up.
Full switch of the mill at East Dixfield, Second day, East Dixiel job is going to go out because it's in paper mill. It gets switched every day.
Right.
And for whatever reason, I only had two, I had two cars in Madrid. So I went with two cars. So what did I do? I stopped. I took the siding at Weld. Instead of the Carthage turn coming out and working them, I said, you know, there's nothing here to do other than the feed place needed a car respotted. So I respotted a car just real quick and then went on my way down to East Dixiel. Never done that before. Never happened.
But it's exactly the kind of thing that would happen on the prototype on an as-needed basis.
As-needed basis. And here's another example. So I'm sitting there. I'm working Madrid. Now, I had run a full circuit on the Oxford County the day before. And so they had gone. They had interchanged with Guilford at White Mountain Junction, done the swap, went back to their respective terminals. Just done a that's what typically would happen on a typical op session. On day two, I'm in Madrid, and I'm like, oh, man, gosh, a big slug of cars for the Oxford County again came in. You know, that's just they showed up.
Right.
So and I needed to make room. I was getting clogged up. So I said, well, I called an extra.
Right.
And I grabbed two units.
Which is what would happen.
Yeah, I grabbed 14 cars, went out to White Mountain Junction, and shoved the cars up on the Berry Mills branch. And I just stuffed them up there, shoved them up, and went light engine back to Madrid. And I did a whole video of that on Facebook. The next day, instead of the Oxford County running a full circuit and, you know, rendezvousing with Guilford in a formal interchange like they normally did, they just went down light engine from North Rumford with a pair of RS3s, went down to White Mountain Junction to fetch this crap that Guilford had dumped on him, which Guilford did that all the time. He's dump on a dump a bunch of cars and you know, you got to figure it out. So they went down there, light engine and, fetched the cars from off the Berry Mills branch and had to deal with it. So, you know, you get up to North Rumford and you know, it was chaotic, but this is what a short line has to deal with. So totally, that would never happen during a typical operating session.
Right.
Would never happen that way because you want to, because
everything's orchestrated.
It's orchestrated. It's orchestrated because you're trying to keep people occupied. Okay.
Right.
If you have five people, seven people, everybody's got to have a job to do. That means all the jobs got to run. So that's the, in essence, that's the problem. There's a, what's driving the op session planning is keeping people occupied. And you don't want to really do that. You know, that's a, takes away from the natural flow of things. So, you know, anyway.
So we address that in part by not having, excuse me, too many people at an op session. So there's less of a burden of you know, keeping them occupied. And, but I mean, I think we have to think about it differently now, right? So the idea of continuous operation and not having to like do this whole almost artificial pre-orchestration of what's going to happen at the session, and instead the just having what happens organically running the railroad be the starting point for the next session. You know what I mean? That has a lot of appeal.
Yeah. There's still, I mean, let's face it, there still has to be setting up of things because in staging you have to turn cars around, you have to change cars out, change the bills, and all that's your staging, right? That's your sort of orchestration. But I think what happens, it begs the question, this whole thing, it's begging the question, well, what do you do when we get back to normal here and we start having op sessions again?
That was my next question.
I think it begs that question. I think what you do is you if I'm running solo and I run say Monday and Tuesday and I get a few jobs done and, you know, there's 3 hours of work left and come Saturday, everybody's coming over. We're going to run the railroad. Whatever's left is left. And if it's a short session, great. If it's a longer one, great too. And everything, it's going to be different. It's just not going to be as,
and when it's time for people to go home, they go home and you just continue the next time. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You continue the next time and say, okay, well, and then, so there's no, there was always a bit of, I'll be honest, I mean, and we've been doing this for a long time. This railroad's been running regularly since 2010. You know,
yeah, that's a long time.
Allagash, that's
yeah.
a long time. It's almost 10 years. I think
that's
it was
why
the
I keep
summer
calling
of
it a
2010.
Mature operation. You know, I mean,
Well, it's maturing. It's not. You know, it's always, as you know, I'm always tweaking, and I'm tweaking till the cows come home, and I'm always. But it's
Yeah,
always
but
for the
that
good, and
doesn't
it's always
speak
better.
to a lack of maturity. That just means
No,
that you're
no,
not
no, no.
stuck in the mud. You know, there's a
Not stuck in the
difference.
mud. It's always refining. But to be honest with you, there's always been a bit of a ramp up, and I mean emotional. I'm an emotional person, as you know. I'm a bit high strung. Always been that way.
No.
Yeah, not anymore because I'm different. I'm not Mike Confalone 4 years ago. I'm the different Mike Confalone now. But anyway, so there was always a bit of a ramp up to it, you know, an excitement, and then when it was done,
Like a
pretty big
performance.
letdown. Pretty big letdown. Yeah, like,
Session
oh,
lag.
crap. Yeah, well, it's over. Like, what am I gonna? I can't run this thing for another 5 weeks. It was
Right.
like, this
Those days
sucks,
are
you
gone.
know? Yeah, that's crap. I mean, that's just, I'm not, it really is amazing how it takes something like this whole situation the country and the world is in to make you realize something small like your hobby can be enjoyed in, you know, in a different way. And there may be people out there, there's lots of people out there, I'm sure, that run all the time, that haven't fallen into this bit of a trap that I think we've fallen into, with these,
And
sort
without
of,
this, you may never have come to
yeah.
this conclusion.
I don't think, no, never would have happened. Never would have happened because there's always been, I've always, the best I could do is if there was stuff left over after a session, I would work on that stuff between sessions. But it was
Yeah.
never enough. I was going out of my way. I remember talking to Joe and I'm going out of my way to come up with things to do that I could do between sessions because I would, it just was not sitting well. So this has changed things around quite a bit in the whole sort of mindset. And there's probably a lot of people out there rolling their eyes saying, well, I've been doing this since day one, you idiot. You know, this, but it's hard when you have a large railroad,
Well,
to
we all
just
kind of
randomly
operate in
run,
a
so.
in our own little vacuum, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, some people are used to making a big circuit and all of that, and there's plenty of famous railroads that, you know, you can't even run them without a full crew and a whole day and all of that stuff. But, you know, I mean, these are personal model railroads, you know what I mean? They're not club layouts, and
No,
you
no.
know, they're no two of them are alike, you know what I mean? Some of the issues are the same and in common, and some of them are quite different, you know.
Yeah.
I think when you operate here next, you're going to be able to finally begin to appreciate what was driving some of these moves, because now that there's you know, like your layout, you have three staging yards, three possible off layout destinations, right?
Yeah.
I have four now, and that doesn't count the short lines. So
Right.
what happens is it complicates, in a good way, the decision making and what you're actually doing. And what I found was, if I was trying to think of everything at once, it would just blow my mind, until I realized
Yeah.
I didn't
Yep.
have to
Yep.
think of everything at once. That just wasn't necessary.
Right. Right.
And what I found was, I said, I'm testing this out. I got to trust the system. I got to see if
Yeah.
I can just let the system kind of call a lot of these shots. And to my relief, I found that I could. You know what I mean? So
Right.
if I just let the destinations and some of those decisions made when writing up the waybills determine what had to happen, all of a sudden it was just, I'll tell you what, the makeup of the trains was different
Yeah.
and more realistic.
Right.
You weren't just putting a train together just to put it together. There was a methodology to it. You know, there was a reason driving that. You know, you're probably rolling your eyes thinking, well, Jesus, I've been doing that for 10 years. But that,
Yeah, pretty much.
that kind of stuff was not happening here all this time. You know what I mean?
It's yeah, that's you've been in, you know, you've been in construction mode for, it's hard to, you know, it's a mindset thing because you have to, when you're done with construction and you're running and, you know, working on some scenery maybe or a little bit of this or that, you're dabbling. I mean, you know, you can focus a lot more mind space on running the railroad and then it becomes, you know, geez, You know, what I don't understand, and again, this is a personal preference thing, but I don't really get it. You know, I was talking to Joe Fugate about this, and he's operations is a tricky subject with some people. Like, there's a lot of modelers out there that just aren't that interested in it, or they're intimidated by it, maybe, or I'm not quite sure what it is. But
well, there's
a lot
fair
of
model
amount.
Builders, you know what I mean? There are people
yeah,
who
yeah,
just
that's
like to
cool.
build things,
What's wrong
which
with
is
that?
fine. You know,
That's great. Hey, listen, I mean, we would. I don't know where I'd be without guys like Rich Cobb or Bob Harp. You know, these guys are incredible modelers, incredible builders. Not everybody is. And then there are some people that, on the other end of the spectrum, that never build the layout in terms of scenery and structures and make it
Plywood
finished. They
Pacific.
They will operate. They're just operators. And
yep.
You know, Plywood Pacific, and that's fine too. I could never
I'm
do that
greedy.
myself.
I want it
But
all.
yeah, I mean, listen, I think ultimately when I come, absolutely. It's got to be the whole, there's no one part of it. You know, people ask, well, what's most important to you, scenery or weathering? Or no, they're all equally, operations, they're all equally important. Operations, operating the railroad is the pinnacle because it you get to see the railroad running through all the scenery and
That's
past
right.
all the structures and the freight cars and weather, it all comes together at that point. I've always referred to the model railroad when people come over to see it and they're not model railroaders. It's functional art. That's what it is. Now, you
yeah.
could say art all day long, art, it's art, art, art. That's another overused word. It is what it is. This is not just art. This is functional art. I mean, this
yeah.
thing comes to life. It actually works. It actually serves a purpose. You know, you can simulate an actual railroad doing the work of an actual railroad. It's amazing, really, if you think about it.
Well,
So
everybody's
we're
got their
very,
own
we're
hot
lucky.
buttons too on that. You know, like for me, you're probably going to laugh, but when you got to critical mass where you didn't have any shiny wheels on your railroad, that for
Yeah.
me, that made a huge difference, believe it or not.
Right. Oh, yeah. No
Like,
doubt about it.
And, you know, it's just
Yeah.
like a personal, you know, it's the kind of thing that lots of other people would ignore. But for me, it was like all I saw until it was done. And it was like, okay,
well,
now I can
it wasn't
relax.
It wasn't just, yeah, it wasn't just shiny wheels, though. I mean, it was 2 years ago. I guess it would have been the spring of, I'm thinking it was the spring, winter into spring of 2018.
That was the great weathering binge.
Yeah, I was going through my recovery with the, you know, anxiety thing, you know, kind of getting out of the woods with that whole thing. And that got me back into, because I was out of the hobby for a little while with everything going on. I was, you know, kind of checked out. And in that, more than anything else, that weathering project, I said, all right, I'm sitting down here. I'm going to do this. And I couldn't stop. It was incredible. I weathered, you know, I don't know. 80 cars, 90
oh,
cars. It was a
more than
ridiculous
that,
number
I'll
of cars. Maybe it was more than
I'll bet it was
maybe it was
100
over 100.
cars. Yeah,
might have been 100 cars in a relatively short period of time, but it transformed the look of the railroad. And
changed
now
everything.
You know,
yep.
It changed everything, you
yep.
know, and
well, you know,
so that was
because it was
big.
The last thing that needed to be done, you know what I mean, to not
yeah,
have everything
yeah,
in
it
harmony.
It really did, because the scene, and that I started to really get a little like, you know what, you know, you got all this scenery and, you know, I've done a really good job and worked really hard to do this, but you know, these freight cars were, like you said, running around with shiny wheels. They're all weighted down with the extra weight and they're running great, but they look like, you know, just took them out of the box. So there was a major effort to do that. Now every single car on the railroad, I think there's 307 freight cars on the railroad in service right now.
Yeah, I want to
on
talk
the
about that.
So, you know, and all of them are weathered. So it's that's a major achievement, you know?
So the car supply, let's talk about that, because that was interesting to me when you mentioned that the other day.
Mm-hmm.
There was a phase that you went through where you felt like there were too many cars on the railroad and you took a lot of them off, and we were comparing, you know, numbers of cars that we had on the railroad and numbers of cars that we were moving in a session, just to get a feel for the relative differences and all of that. So you had continued for a while there to reduce the number of cars. I thought you were down to the, you know, kind of the 250 range for a while there, you know. And I'm just curious to know what's driving the increase.
Yeah, that's a really good question and a good observation. And I know what it is, really. So the reason, and this is really interesting. The reason I reduced cars it was because of the situation we were in. And this gets back to the whole premise of running these massive sessions. We used to run, before I split the session into two, we used to run a full schedule during one op session. We used to go 6, 8 hours and just, balls to the walls. And Posick, Joe Posick, the Madrid guy, he's the man there for a long, long time. And I could just see him, I could see the hairs turning gray during the session. I mean, and he's a tough bird. He'll never admit, this is too much. But then one session, it became too much. And it literally seized. The yard seized up. He had nowhere to go. I remember this very distinctly, and I started pulling cars off. And that was the only time I had to do it, but there was a fundamental problem. We were doing too much during a session. And so that led to reducing or cutting the session in half. So we'd actually do half a session and spread things out. And that fixed the problem. I mean, there was no more chaos. Once the chaos went away, I started looking at the train sizes and said, okay, I shoot high and then I reduce. I never add incrementally. I always shoot for the moon and then I reduce if it's too much. I always go high, which is not the smartest thing, but that's just the way I am.
Are you talking
So I
about the
started,
train ties in that regard?
yeah, number
Okay.
of cars at Consignees, all the stuff that, I want it to have some, some gusto.
Yeah.
So I started increasing, adding more cars on. And most recently, when this whole situation started and I started to, consider the first solo op session, I added even more cars. Because there was no concern for gridlock, because you're spreading things out over time. You're not creating situations where your main yard, so it all has to do with the yard. If the yard can't handle the traffic, you're screwed, And that's what was happening. Madrid, which is a good size yard, it's not that big, couldn't handle it. So now it can handle it because everything is spread way out. So the trains are big again. And
But I mean, I guess my question is this a function of the solo operations, and would it need to be different if it were a so-called op session, or is it?
No, I don't think so. Because since we cut the session in two, I think it's doable at this level. I think it'll be a little more challenging if we have a full session where there's, but that can be controlled simply by, and then that's the other thing is just coming up with simple rules. If the yard can't handle a train, then the train ain't coming. It's going to sit on the closest siding, or it's not going to leave staging. So those are decisions you have to make, because
Yeah, that's what
it's
they
either
do on the
that or you,
prototype.
that's it doing the prototype, or if not, then you have to reduce the train size to the point where they're, it doesn't look right. It doesn't look big enough. It doesn't, there's a certain critical mass with a
Yeah.
road train on
Yep.
this railroad, on yours, that looks right. Now I'm looking at that number right now is say between
25 cars.
25, 25 and 35 cars. 35 is a little on the high side. 25 to 30 is really optimum. It's a good beefy train, but it's not too much. You can run it at a decent speed. It's all those factors. As far as staging goes, see, I have some limitations in staging, especially now with the Oxford County expansion, that North Rumford there. And I was concerned. Remember, I was saying, well, geez, any trains that go to Waterville need to be 20 cars or less so they could fit into the staging yard, and you wouldn't see them protruding into the Oxford County scene. Well, I said, the heck, what the hell with that? I'm not. This is ridiculous. So, you run a train in there. If it's 30 cars, you run it in, and you
You
double the
double it.
tail end. You double the 050 the last 10 cars into the adjacent track and done. That's it's as simple as that, really. So yeah, the trains are big now. They're the good size. But they're not 40 plus cars. And a lot of that has to do with just the operational planning and the constant tweaking. And it's to the point now where everything just looks kind of right. However, even now, like I was, I made a pretty significant change. When I started all this, I added a train, this dedicated Bethel train, which goes to the CN interchanges. I had to create traffic for that, so I had to rebuild some different cars and go into the boxes and get some more cars out. And that's where that additional traffic primarily came from. I had to make some adjustments after that first session because there was still a little light on the one end. So I added another 10 or 12 cars. And I'm saying to myself, man, this is going to come back to bite me. I keep putting cars on the layout. When the heck is this going to explode?
Well, my
but
question
so
is,
far, it
why
hasn't,
did you have you know? Room for that?
What's that?
Like, how did you have room for that?
You mean the additional cars?
Yeah. Like,
well,
where,
there's no,
where are they?
I don't know.
You know what?
I don't know.
That's the right answer. That's the right answer.
Yeah, they're here and there and everywhere, really. You know, it's just the question is, really, you look at it this way. The longest, as long as the train can fit in staging, it's fine. You know, if you can get it out, even if you have to double it out, it's not a big deal. As long as it, once it gets on the railroad, as long as you can manage it, if it's 30 cars, well, you put an extra engine on it, whatever. If it looks right, it's right. Now you get in Madrid, and if three trains converge on there at 25 cars apiece, you're screwed. You know,
right.
It's never going to happen. So you can't have that happen. You got
to. So you just don't do that.
You just don't do that. You just don't. And now that I'm running solo, of course, it's almost too easy because, you know, it inevitably during a regular session, you would have a train. You remember how it was at Madrid?
Oh, yeah.
You'd have them knocking on the door. Joe's there, you know, going nuts. And you've got one on the Androscoggin sub, one on the Kennebec sub, and then one coming from the north. I'm like, this is ridiculous. So it would never
but
happen
he also,
that way in real life.
He's gotten a lot more involved in the sort of general dispatching there. You know what I mean? So, you
well,
know,
he runs and, now. He's a know, crew. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, he's also dispatching, you know, sort of.
Right. That's right. That's
so
right.
In other words,
yeah, he's roaming.
It's like the whole organism there is sort of adjusting in real time to what has to be happening. You know?
Well, look, I mean, Santos is Madrid now. I mean, Joe hasn't run Madrid in months and months and months. I mean,
right.
Dave's been the guy there. And Dave even, you know, I'm sure you've driven home with him, obviously, and I'm sure there's times he's left here with a migraine. So, you
but
know,
always,
it can't,
but always having had a good time.
Having a great time. But even that, you know, I'm looking at that saying, you know what, that's probably just not quite prototypical. And really what that boils down to, you know, is too many jobs, too much going on in a condensed period of time, you know, and that's a function of the number. If you really start to break this down, it's like the critical number of operators gets smaller and smaller and smaller. We used to have 7 was the magic number. Now we had a session before the shit hit the fan here, excuse my French, where it was 7 people and it was too many guys. Again, it was like, you know what? It was good. It was a great time, but it was too much.
Right.
5 guys is the magic number, but even that, honestly, it's probably too many. You really could run this with 3 people, one at Madrid, one at New Sharon, so the yards are running simultaneously, and then one guy running a road train, or maybe 2. So 3 or 4 people is the optimum number. I'm not saying it has to be that, but that is, it gets smaller and smaller.
Because
I don't think, yeah, because the goal shouldn't be. The goal always was to get through the schedule. It should never be that. It should just
right.
be run whatever
goal
you can.
Goal should be to work the jobs.
Work the job and slow down. We all can. Now, I know even you have, you know, have slowed your pace down, you know, where
way
you used
down.
To be fast, way down. And because you'd be like, all right, what's next? You'd come to me looking for another job. I'm like, how the heck did he finish that job so quick? You know, and other people have been like jackrabbits. And this, that drives me nuts. I don't like that. Now, it's hard to, you have to teach people. You can't, you know, I'm not a person who's going to just, you know, yes, I have rules and, you know, guidelines, but I'm not going to come and, you know, write you up for going too fast. So people have to embrace it and like it for what it is and the reasons why we slow down.
Yeah.
Not to the extent.
In a way,
not,
you have to
you know,
sell it.
You have to sell it. You do. And sometimes the only way to sell it is for that person to, you know, actually experience it on their own. Now, you can go to the extreme, and I won't mention, you know, go into any details or anything, but there are times where I've seen people that take too long. You know, there's a fine line. There's,
right.
there's a kind of a good, happy compromise. So, and I think this is, you know, I was talking to Jack Ozanich a couple of days ago, and I hadn't talked to him in a while, and we had a nice conversation, and Jack was, we were talking about operations. I learned a lot from him, I really did. And he was here a couple times, and we both model in Maine, and I decided to do the scenery I'm doing, the early spring from Jack's Atlantic Great Eastern. And Jack's a real rail career railroader, but I think he takes the model railroading just as seriously as he did his job. He's a rule book guy, and extremely rigid with the rules and all that stuff, and that's awesome. I took bits and pieces from that, and one of the things I took from him, and we talked about it on the phone the other day, was just the simulation of thinking about being, if you're on a job, thinking about what the crew is doing at any given time, the number of guys, if it's a two-man, a three-man crew, say, and where are the guys on the ground, what are
Right.
they doing? I just think about those things instead of just, well, throw a switch and run in and get your car. Like, where are the guys?
Yeah,
There's a
you can
guy in the
crowd him in.
cab.
I'm actually stopping to pick up my guy and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, hey, that's really cool. And I continually catch myself forgetting things. Like, hey, man, you should have normalized that switch when you got out of there in the yard or whatever. It's just picking up guys, exactly. And all those little things, they may seem like cumbersome, but they actually really add a lot of prototype flavor to it. It
Right.
just really cool.
So I have a
So
couple
anyway.
of advisory questions for you here. Now we talked about how Dave and Joe have been the yard guys, right?
Sure.
And I admire what they're doing there because although I enjoy doing it, I don't feel like it's my core competency to run a big complicated yard. But under this circumstance, we talked about that. You said operating Madrid during an op session would make you a little nuts. But
Oh
now you're
yeah.
doing it, right? You're
Right,
running
yeah.
Madrid in between, and I'm running, Pittston Yard. So a road train will come in. And of course, I've got all these waybills that I'm dealing with for the first time. So immediately I realize, well, I'm going to need some, a couple of sorting shelves here because I need to figure out what the heck I'm doing. But and maybe I should be asking everybody this question, but you have a train that's coming in that your set off might include cars for five or six different consignees that go on two or three different locals, right? So
Sure.
what I did, for lack of a better way to start, was okay, I've got the most number of cars for this local. Let me build that local and get him out on the road so I've got a little more room here and I can think about these other cars. But I'm finding that it's not a trivial thing to look at all of that stuff and then start sorting it in the yard, but also continuing to keep track of it in real time. Like it's just not easy for me to do that. You know what I mean? I've got a lot of boxes and stuff, and you're moving the cards around, but a lot of times you might have several things on one track because you don't have 58 tracks. You know what I mean? You're trying to make use of the length for lack of width of a yard. So have you run into any issues of your own like that? And have you developed any have you got any tips as to how what you're learning from that and how you're handling it?
That's a really good question. Because I hadn't really worked Madrid. I mean, I'd drilled it working the throttle with Dave or Joe in the past many, many times.
Vastly different.
Yeah, vastly different. And this is vastly different because, you're working it, but there's no train breathing down your neck,
Yeah, at least you've got
unless you,
time.
yeah, you've got some more time. You could take all the time you want. So I think I just, there's no really magic formula, only to determine or think about what your objectives are when you're going to go on duty at the yard. What's my objective? What do I have coming in the list of trains? Okay, I've got a northbound. I've got an Allagash bunch of cars. I'm going to set up an Allagash pickup, and I'm going to set that up on. I try to keep particular tracks for set out and pick up, track one and two,
Yes.
and the rest is for sorting. So that I do.
Yep.
And I'll just kind of go through and think about, what's coming and get that pickup set up. And keep it simple. I'll do say two things. I don't try to accomplish more than a thing or two. And when I say that a thing or two, a pickup for say one train or two trains. I don't try to like sort the whole yard out. Although during that first session, I actually had it on a couple of occasions fully blocked. I had everything. There was like only one track where there was a bunch of random cars. Everything else was sorted nicely, which was probably maybe not so realistic. I don't know.
Well, that's what I've been trying to do is keep one track for the stuff that's a hodgepodge, so that I know what's going on elsewhere.
Yeah, I find that I'm dumping onto track 7, which is the back track. I just shove miscellaneous stuff up there to get it out of the way, and then I'll just work. You know, all right, I got a WAAG coming. I've got a northbound Allegash pickup, or I've got a Dixfield, a Mechanicfield of Dixfield. I got to get the Dixfield pick, you know, or there's a Jackman turn coming in, for instance. Now, I look at the yard right now. I have no idea what's in it. I couldn't tell you anything about what the heck is in that yard. I'd have to go in there and like study the bills before I start
first
up.
First thing
again.
You do
study
is pick
the bills.
Up the bills and yep.
Yeah.
And that's
study
what
the
I've
bills.
Been doing. I've been when I get there, I might take 10 or 15 minutes just going through the bills.
Oh yeah.
Walking around, looking at cars, trying to picture what I want to do, you know? So, so that's basically what you're doing too. It's not, there's no rocket science to it. It's just,
there's no rocket science whatsoever. I'm using the bills, studying the bills, and I'll pull, you know, I'll say, all right, what do we got coming? And just say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to work here for an hour or whatever it takes. And I'm going to make up the pickup for whatever train is next. And then maybe I'll do one or two other tasks. And then I'll park the switcher on the back, one of the back tracks. Then I'll get on that road job, wherever it is, it's perched somewhere, or if it's in staging, run it in and interact. And here's the other thing I would suggest. And I don't know if you're doing this, but for people who are considering doing this that have multiple things going on, and say in a yard situation, you have a yard switcher, it's idling away, et cetera, and then you've got, and this will get, I'll get on to the, I want to segue into another quick thing about power. But what I've been doing is if I switch from, say, running the switcher to getting on that road train, I'll turn the sound off.
Oh, yeah.
On the local. Keep the lights on. Keep the headlight on. But turn the sound off so that you can focus on your road train. Because if you're down at the south end of Madrid, say, and you're coming in, a road train's coming in, you're with a set of power. Down at the other end, the switcher's down there. I don't want to hear it chirping away as I get closer. I want to focus on my yard, on my road train. But having the headlight on indicates that it's still working. You know,
it's
sort
alive.
Of a compromise between
the
two. Yeah, it's alive. And the other thing that's interesting is in a yard setting, and something I really had done only in a chaotic fashion during op sessions, and very little of it because you just couldn't do much of it, is being a hostler, okay?
Yep.
Working. I have been, it's been crazy. It's been awesome. I keep a plug-in throttle, a UT4, right there at Madrid, and I'm constantly breaking up consists and putting them back together, you know, because you can't, that's just what happens at a yard like that. Power
it's
will
what, it's
come
what
in,
you need to do.
It's just what you do. If I need an extra, and I need to add an engine to go down to Dixfield, I'll grab an engine from this consist, you know, deconsist it, put it in, on the point or second unit. So I've done a lot of hostling, a lot of changing around of engines. So we're normally, you know, during at the end of a session, you again, getting back to original discussion, pulling engines off manually. And I haven't done that at all. And it's, you know, this, whatever power is there, it's like, okay, what do I have to work with here? I got a train I got to run out of here. What do we have? And what do I want to run? You know, and it's, but I can't just pick anything. I got to pick what's there. So it limits you. And, it's just very, very realistic. But getting back to the yard itself, it's just a matter of, you know, looking at the bills, shuffling them around and just, you know, doing the tasks, you know, one slice at a time, one job at a time, and doing that task and then letting it be for a while and then jumping on something else.
And experience probably doesn't hurt a bit.
Yeah, and with the understanding that switcher is running in perpetuity, it's just because you walk away from a job, it doesn't mean the job's not still working. That's the thing. You have to come up with that mindset that just because you leave a job at, you know, say you're switching at Laceyville and you've switched you've made half the moves, you've got two consignees still to switch or whatever. You don't have to finish it. You can just leave it there and walk away.
Oh, that's what I've done because I figured time for that job is frozen until I go back
It's
and
frozen,
yeah.
yeah, that's right. That's or in a big yard setting where a yard switcher is working constantly, when you walk away, it doesn't mean it hasn't worked. It's been working while you've been gone. You come
Well,
back
yeah.
and you just
Although
pick
in
it
our
up.
scenario, the fact of the matter is it's going to be just like you left it. So,
Oh yeah, I know, but it's
which
just
I
one of
don't
those
think it's a
things that
bad
just.
thing because my mindset is the time slicing kind of thing that you
Yeah.
know now we're cutting back to this scene, you know, or
That's right.
this
That's
function,
right.
you know, and when I walk away
Yeah.
from it, it's just waiting for me to get back to it. So I'm
And
finding it
yeah.
enormously interesting and engaging, way beyond what I would have thought it was. So I'm glad you thought of it.
It's I'm sure there are other people out there that have thought of it and are doing the same thing, or maybe people that have been doing it all along. It's just a bit of a revelation, that's all. And I think if nothing else, for those people who have large layouts, that typically wait weeks and weeks between sessions, it's just something to consider, you know. It's just something to consider, this operating in perpetuity. It just sort of, just, I don't know, it's something about it that's kind of different and interesting. And it's just, we're bottom line is get to enjoy the railroad more than before, and that's what it's all
Yep.
about. Yeah.
Well, I
Yep.
that was, I think, a stimulating discussion. I hope people found it interesting. We went a little longer than we usually do, but I didn't feel like there was a lull on that. So I feel no need to introduce any other topics for the purposes of this one.
Let people chew on that for a while, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, cool. Well, it
All
was
right,
fun.
well,
It was
something
definitely
tells
been
me
good.
we'll talk more about this in the future. And if anybody finds this
Yeah.
topic interesting, chime in and we can explore it further because we're going to be definitely learning more, I think, about it as we go along.
Sounds like a plan. All right,
All
good.
right.
Well, it's good talking with you again, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, we'll see you.